On today's episode, we're going to talk about how to deal with agencies and CTOs. We're going to talk about reading 4 books to fundamentally change your way of thinking in business. And we're going to talk about how to work better with coaches and advisors to build software more cost effectively.
Let's go.
This is the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, where we help entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision by guiding them to profitability. Today, we have Jay Crouch. He is an advisor slash CTO of multiple organizations in the tech space. Jay is a veteran of the tech industry with over 15 years experience in both startups and billion-dollar enterprises. He has helped to build a multi-billion-dollar unicorn, The Honest Company, small company, right? He has also co-founded 4 companies, each of which has raised millions upon millions of dollars. He has led large cross-function teams, 45 plus, as CEO, President, CTO, CMO, CPO, and COO, CAO, Chief Awesome Officer. I'm sure that's the next one. That's the only C that I haven't seen yet. And he has forged relationships with major brands like Marriott, Hilton, and so many more. Jay, it's an honor to read the list of accomplishments, and an even bigger honor to have you on the show. Welcome, my friend. How's your day going?
Awesome. Love that intro, by the way.
I try to make it unique. You know, I try to make it like real. So before we get into the heavy hitting questions, because I have a lot, but we have to start the podcast off the same way we do every single time, and that is with an icebreaker. So imagine you just had the absolute best day of your life. Where are you going to eat, and what are you going to order in order to make your day complete?
100% crab cakes at a seafood restaurant by the beach.
Dang, that was like no-brainer.
Yeah. We just had this conversation like last night about what our last meal on earth would be. So I was kind of prepped for that one.
Nice, nice. So is there a particular restaurant that you're going to, or are you just like?
Nah, man, I love crab cakes. Like, I just can't get enough of them.
Nice.
You know, there's different kinds. There's the spicy mustard kind, which I like more, or like the chili sauce type. But when it gets kind of fishy, I'm like, not so much. But
yeah,
I like the saucy ones.
No, I'm right there with you. I mean, crab cakes are pretty freaking awesome. So, you know, I like that answer. That's the first crab cake I've heard. So I respect that. Jay, without further ado, man, let's talk about you more. Who are you? What is your story?
Well, I'm a tech nerd, and I'm a little bit weird because, as you heard, I've had my hands in a lot of different. Sorry, I got a fire truck right as I.
They're coming to get you, man. They're coming to get you.
Shh. Yeah, so kind of weird because I've had my hands dirty in a lot of different capacities. You know, like when I transitioned from doing just strict technical work to like selling and promoting a business, you know, it was an eye-opening experience to work with different kinds of people and then start to understand the different struggles that people have when they're working with technologists in particular.
Very cool. Very cool. So how did this all start? You know, relatively young guy, you know, you seem like you got your wits together. Where did it all begin? Like this technological boom, how did you get a part of it?
So great question. I was originally a physicist, and I remember actually in college, and, you know, like literally this happened in a 2-week period. I got an award as like outstanding physicist of the year. And then the next week, they had a career advancement, like a career training seminar. And they basically were like, look, you're not going to be able to get a job as a physicist, so you should really learn some computer skills because you'll probably have to use those. And then I was like, well, hey, if that's what I'm going to do, then I might as well just do that. So I switched and got into computer science.
Very cool. That's cool. So you know, you started working with companies like The Honest Company and have relationships with other larger organizations. You know, what are some of the things that you were able to work on, and you know, what are some key takeaways that we can take with us when working with large organizations?
Well, so obviously I worked my way up. Honest Company is very recent, and I left there about a year ago. And I think, well, I'll do it this way. So, you know, I think that one of the most important things to understand when working with the technical team is that as a this would be for large organizations and small organizations. I think that the everyone wants to think, everyone who's non-technical wants to manage technology the way they manage everything else because it's the way they manage everything else. And I completely understand it because I've managed marketing, operations, etc. But the hard part is that you can't really manage anything that you can't inspect. And that's sort of the go-to phrase that I try to educate everybody on, because when it comes to tech and software in particular, but even hardware, the process itself is super important. And so when you're, when you're a CEO or you're a senior manager or you're a startup founder, and you come into technology and software and you say, I want it to do these features, and then you think of it as like, oh, well, that's the tangible product. Well, great, then you can inspect that, right? You can see if the software is doing what you think it should do, and then that tells you if you're on track, right? Except it doesn't, because the process underneath it, is sort of weird. Like, everyone who can build software for you has this financial motive because they build software, right, to coach you to build stuff you don't need to build. And then, especially to answer your question about large organizations, everyone in that organization wants some upward mobility. So there's a really good reason for your directors and your VPs and even your CTOs to like embark on these projects that are to the business extremely costly, right? That don't make any sense, but to them personally, they get to put a cap on their head and be like, "Hey, I built that thing that was $2 million." To the startup founder, make it more relevant there. I meet lots and lots of founders who say, "Hey, I've got this idea, and I want to go turn it into something," right? And so then they're like, "Okay, well, it's an app, right? Everyone wants an app, or everyone wants machine learning these days because investors love machine learning." And so then they'll go to an agency, or they'll find a CTO that codes and be like, "Hey, build this thing for me." And then that person goes, "Sure, I'll build that thing for you," but that thing shouldn't have been built in the first place. And that's kind of the biggest danger that's out there. And so.
Yeah, no, very, very relatable. A lot of people do have these. Everybody has ideas. It's just should these ideas come to fruition? And so you have all these titles that you have been, and you've worked with so many founders and organizations. Are there any core similarities behind successful organizations and the ones that fail?
Well, yes. I'm gonna answer this in the context of technology again. But I think that the most successful founders and I'll just incorporate CEOs in that surround themselves with a pocket of people that advise them. And I use that term kind of like informally and formally. So the point is, when you're a leader, you just can't be an expert in anything that you do, just in general, right? Like you got to like charge, you got to break down walls, you just got to get there. And then that what that generally means is, yeah, you can kind of go poke around and inspect to kind of tie it back to that part of the conversation in most things, but even then, you're probably not an expert, right? So the not if there was one thing that I think is consistent to successful entrepreneurship or successful leadership, it would be surrounding yourself with people who aren't responsible for driving results. They're not internal to the core team, but they're external in your network, and they may be paid, they may be unpaid, depending on kind of like how sexy your business is. And these people help you manage better. They help you understand if that particular person over there is cost effective or providing, good recommendations, or simply out of their depth and perhaps need some skill coaching. And I think that that's, if there's one thing, I think that's really the core, that's important.
So management is also really important, and I know you're coming out with a book in the near future. So if you could just speak to what you have happening in the up and coming months, and what are some key takeaways that we can learn and implement in our business today?
Okay, so actually, everything that we've been talking about so far, that is the topic of the book. We've been getting out there already. And up what I'm going to be doing in the next 3 to 6 months as I prepare to launch the book and then launch the book is talk about the content of the book, right? As often as I can, I'm going to be trying to be appearing as publicly as I can, and just, you know, just getting the gospel out there. And essentially what I'm talking about is exactly what we just mentioned, the role of advisors within companies, the role of coaches within companies, and the differentiator between the two, just to kind of create some terms, is I consider advisors free or equity based, and then coaches just paid advisors. And a lot of people kind of come into that concept going, well, wait a minute, what do you mean by paid advisor? Shouldn't everyone like be drinking the Kool-Aid and be like, you know, part of the sort of stratosphere of the company? And my answer to that is that there's a lot of cases where a founder or a CEO is not in a position to get an advisor on board that in an equity capacity and pay attention. That's the key. It's like paying attention, right? So when it comes to technology in particular, like let's start from the ground up and then we'll go from like early stage startup all the way to honest level. So as a founder has an idea, they're starting up. The number one mistake there's many mistakes here, but the first one that most people make when they look at advisors would be saying, hey, I want to go get somebody who's like some badass at some really big company and have them on my board, and this person's going to help me like connect with other people. Okay. So yes, advisors are extremely effective at doing that, but technical advisors are not. Right, a lot of technical people. Sure, some of them may be connected, but honestly, if you can find somebody over in the marketing space or in the operational space, you know, something like that, like they're gonna be able to help you on a network basis a lot better. And what ends up happening is when you get a technical advisor that's like a really big shot, they don't have time to help you, and they don't give a shit, right? Like, let's just be honest. Every non-technical founder out there has a great idea, and that's what entrepreneur is about, and I love it, but there's too many, right? So that like the supply and demand is just way off. So generally speaking, my advice is you're gonna need to probably pay somebody who's more tactical to be an advisor and to help you manage your resources, whether that be like a CTO that you hire or an agency that you hire, or you know, if you're really just trying to save money and like manage devs yourself. All three of those options are totally cool. There's lots of different ways to build a company, but no matter what you do, no matter who you hire to build the software, the very first step is getting someone to be your check and balance, and that's that advisor capacity. Hmm. So that's kind of like part one, and then you know, part two of that message is like what does an advisor do for you? Like, what should your expectations be, and what are you looking for? And then part three is like what to look out for in terms of paying the advisor and how to set up the relationship for success. So part two is kind of rewinding back is what did I just say? Like how to what they do for you in setting up expectations, right? So in addition to just making sure that somebody is there to help you, mm-hmm. You have to focus and understand that technology actually has three core disciplines within it. One is product, one is team, and one is code. If we're talking about software as technology, right? So product means figuring out what solutions to build. This could be consumer facing, and this could be, you know, back office facing. Either way, it's like, what should we build? What should we buy? And mostly the biggest question is, what can we not build, right? The most successful and most effective product-oriented people are going to help an organization by teaching the founder how not to build. And then when you get into team, the next question becomes, well, who can we get that can do this stuff the most, like the most effectively, the most cost effectively, cheapest? And what's really important to understand there is that somebody who's really good at team is probably not tied to a specific technology. Right. So like if you get it, a lot of people go get a CTO or a CTO at some other company and be like, hey, I want you to build my team for me. And that CTO has spent the last 15 years working in, I don't know, pick a technology like PHP, Java, Rails, whatever. what happens then is that that person kind of knows that ecosystem and knows how to solve problems with that toolkit. And so then they only look for other people that can solve, that are Rails people, for example, right? And so a really important characteristic is to separate the person who's helping you get, you know, and identify and vet your engineers from the person who's building the software, right? And that's the, I don't think I said that well, but that's a huge misconception that everybody has. A lot of people come to me and say, hey, I want this amazing CTO that codes, like he's going to build the team and he's going to, or she is going to code too. And I'm like, no, those are completely different skill sets. And even if somebody has both, you really don't want them doing both, because that then they're going to have to make decisions that allow them to only recruit in the people for the skills that they have, rather than what is the best opportunity for the business. And then finally, once you separate the team, the leader from the implementer, then the question becomes, okay, how do we build our technology in a scalable way that we're in scalability is kind of one of those words that's like strategic. Like a lot of people don't really know what it really means, right? Well, I'll make it really tangible. Scalability means if you're working with an engineer, a vendor, an agency, a CTO, whatever, as a leader, you want to have that lever that always allows you to go to a different partner if things start to not work out. And that means that your code has to be built in a way that the next person that you go turn it over to help you build it with can work with it. And the problem is, as a non-technical person, you have no idea what that looks like. So you're going to need a third, that third skill set to oversee the technology and oversee its scalability and make sure it's good. So these are three different roles, and that's why technology is so incredibly expensive, and that's why like 8 out of 10 companies massively screwed up. And that's why I wrote the book, right? Like, this is everyone has this idea, they want to get out there, they want to build the next Honest, next Facebook, whatever it might be. And like, I'm here to support that, but I'm also here to say you have to take tech more serious than you do marketing, right? Like, I've gone out many times to a Facebook vendor and said, I want to do a pay-for-performance model. Here's 15% of my ad spend. Show me the results. Cool. It's good. I'm going to double down, go deeper. And that decision is just so easy as a founder. You know, you just measure quickly, just check your authenticity, make sure you're working with people you trust and inspect, right? Like, it's super simple. But with tech, you're going to need all three of these out of the gate. And so, you know, my message at that point, and this kind of goes into section three of what I want to talk about and what's in the book, is that, okay, that's a lot to accomplish, especially if you're coming out of the gate day one, right? Like, that's a lot of people. And so how do you get it? And my advice is basically there's a concept called an advising CTO that almost no one that I meet is familiar with. And that person can help you build this whole team, right? And can help you get all of your bases covered and can do so in a very cost-effective way, right? And so it's not that I'm an advising CTO. I'm not pushing me. Yes, I work as an advising CTO, but it's really more about, like, how do you work with anyone, right? Any technical leader, here's the mechanism. And I'd love to do that for you. And so that... that model is basically this. The most important person is the team leader, the person who's going to help you figure out all of the different pieces to the puzzle. And that person should be technology agnostic, which I'm kind of putting in like air quotes. Like, again, going back to shouldn't care what technology you're in. Then you hire a more cost-effective, think like director level candidate, and that person oversees the actual code itself, does code reviews. And frankly, as a founder, you never want to talk to that person, right? The advising CTO is the one who's managing that. But that's where the management stops, right? And that's where it's cost effective for teams, even as large as Honest. The word advising in the term advising CTO means that CTO is not managing the team. It's not responsible for delivering performance. You are. Right, or whoever you delegate in as a lower cost resource, is they're full time dedicated, and that's where you save a bunch of money because you get an equity player right there, right? That's where the co-founder sits, You know, maybe they're making half salary, whatever, and they're just completely lifeblood in, and then they're supervised by this team coach, that advising CTO. And then the last piece of the puzzle is the advising CTO is going to either have to tell you that they're strong with product or not. And if they're not, which is most of the time, then they'll help you find, you know, another technically oriented business owner that can help you figure out like how do we not build things and supervise the product side of it.
Well, so a couple of like a ton of questions came in into my mind when you were speaking, and the one thing that I kind of wanted to learn more about is the aspect of like an agency, because the hardest part for any business is finding the talent, and then when they find the talent, then they have to nurture the talent and train the talent and get them acclimated with their startup or their business, et cetera. And networks really well for some businesses that can afford that rate. But then there are other businesses that simply can't, like maybe a startup who may not have all the capital. What are your thoughts on just organizations hiring agencies, and what are some, just quick tips on how to make sure that your agency is working as efficiently as they should?
Awesome question. So I run into this all the time. Let me tell a story of how this goes bad. No, I'll answer your, well, okay, I'll answer your question first, then I'll tell the story. I just answered the question. The way to manage the agency is to have someone else on your team who's
Gotcha.
independent from the agency who is overseeing them. And again, like think of it from a math perspective. You may be paying your agency $10,000 a month, $5,000, $20,000 a month. That's the majority of the money that you're sending the agency. I mean, hey, maybe it's a major project and you're spending 400K. But the advising CTO that is overseeing this should be probably like 1K, right?
Gotcha.
So it's like a phenomenally lower relationship. This is not going to break the bank in any way. But that person's role is to keep the agency from wasting all of your money. And I want to make that very real because this story is what caused me to like write this book and get on this podcast right now and everything. I was working at Honest. I was in here. I live in Santa Monica. We call it Silicon Beach because we want to affectionately be Silicon Valley, even though we're completely not. I was on a panel and this guy, I won't tell you his name, but we'll call him Mark, right? And so Mark comes up to me. He's like, "Hey man, I'd love to hear what you had to say, and I would love you to review my MVP when I get it built." And for anyone who's listening who doesn't know what MVP is, it just means minimum viable product. And within the entrepreneur space, that basically just generally means the simplest product that I could possibly build to test my idea, right, and get some customers to kind of use it. So how can I get the simplest, cheapest thing I could? So Mark comes up to me and he's like, "Hey man, I want you to review this when I'm done." And I'm not doing this kind of work at this point, right? Like I'm helping Honest build up their technical architecture and blah blah blah. And so like 9 months go by, right? I say yes, but 9 months go by. I think this guy is gone. He calls me up and he's like, "Man, I did it." And I'm like, "Cool, I want to see it." And so he shows up. We go to the coffee shop across from my apartment. We have breakfast, and he starts telling me a story. And his story is basically he just spent $100,000. I think it was like $85,000. He spent 9 months of his life building it, and it's actually beautifully designed, right? Like the user experience is great, and he's showing it to me, and I just developed this sense of horror, right? Because his app, I won't bore you with the details, but basically his app is a media sharing idea. So think like Spotify, except you don't use it every day. It's not for like music like Spotify. It's like you're going to use it like once a month, maybe. And the stuff that you're sharing is not like Instagram where it's like pictures and you need your phone. It's stuff that's like readily accessible on the web. And so this will where to get real. I said to him, "Okay, so Mark, which is not his name, do
Damn you,
you
Mark.
Damn you, do you, if someone shares a link with you and says, 'Hey, I want you to check this out,' are you more likely to check out a link to a web page or download an app?" And he's like, "Oh, okay, well, yeah, obviously I check out a website." I was like, okay, well, statistically, that's completely true, like 100x times, right? Now, this app that you've designed only works if the people who are sharing this media between each other have the app. So you don't have any mechanisms here to bring new customers in to your ecosystem. And the people who do download it are only going to use it once a month. So the likelihood of them remembering that they even have this app is like zero. So unfortunately, you just spent 9 months and $100,000, well, $85,000 for something that we could have built that would have been way more effective on the web for $2,000. And then I pointed him towards someone who could build that for $2,000. That is the problem, right? And it was his agency like bad people? No, they of course not. They were trying to do their best, but their job is to build software. And so when a leader goes to anyone, CTO, agency, whatever, and says, "Hey, I want to build this thing. Will you build it for me? At, you know, and fill me with a sense of trust because we go have coffee a couple times." Like that is just so misaligned that it's crazy to me,
Yeah.
and that's what I'm trying to talk about.
That's a real story. And that's amazing that you're able to that you know honestly I know the agency world very well. Know the agency world very, very well and never really knew that this type of world existed, people like yourself and it is so needed. So, you know, kudos for you for finding that that niche and just going all in on it. I think it's a really exciting thing to talk about, especially because of the dreamers of entrepreneurs. They're always so high, but realistically, you need somebody to bring them all in and ground them a little bit. So I do have a couple more questions, if that's okay with you. I have two more, actually. And the one question in particular is, if there is someone that you would like to further help your business, who would you like to meet, and why would you like to meet them?
I'm going to think about that while I give you an answer. I actually had that answer. And his name is Eric Ries, who is the original author of The Lean Startup and the guy who came up with the concept for MVPs and the guy who really revolutionized the whole industry of tech. He actually just launched his book, his newest book, like 3 weeks ago. And so I had a chance to meet him. And we're now talking about collaborating on my book. And by the way, I got to disclaim that, like he hasn't agreed to do it, so nobody get me in trouble there. But you know, we are talking, and I'm super excited and pumped. So I feel like that just happened.
Yeah, no. I think it like once you put it out into the universe, it more than likely it usually comes true. So,
Crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
yeah, and I can say speaking to that point, Eric Ries's book was like the second or third book that I read as an entrepreneur, and the amount of value you received from that book in particular, it's literally like it's up there
Insane,
with the
right?
Bible. No, I'm just saying
Yeah.
that because he might be listening. No, but seriously, it is a startup. It is a startup Bible. I mean, people read that to get their ideas flowing, to further cement themselves into their idea.
100%,
Very
100%.
cool.
And what I'm really interested to talk to him about is he just spent the last 5 years working with really large companies, including GE. And he rolled out like this massive lean startup approach entrepreneurship program within GE. And in a lot of ways it was successful, but in a lot of ways it wasn't. And my belief it's because of the same topics we talked about today, right? Like everyone there at GE had a vested interest in in securing their own job security and, you know, making more money and increasing their title. And all of those motivations go against you know, the primary principles of a lean startup of build less. And you know, it takes this sort of independent party to make that all to grease the wheels and make it all work.
No, totally.
But to answer your question, who would I like to meet now? I would love to meet someone who listens to this podcast, who runs a larger organization and agrees with what I just said and has a story to tell in the larger space. Because I can talk about Honest, but I don't really like talking about Honest because it's, you know, I'm too close to it. Like there's people there that I love and respect, and I don't really want to share all of ways that that got messed up, but it got really messed up. So I know this is, I know this issue, everything we just talked about applies to all sorts of scale. And I'd love to talk to any leaders that are out there that would be interested.
Well, it actually leads me to my final question. And that is the Blind Entrepreneur, this podcast, are for individuals who may be temporarily blind in business. Maybe those people who that you were speaking to that have this idea, they know they need a technical co-founder or hire an agency in order to build it, but they don't have the proper resources in order to obtain all of that. So to the individuals who are temporarily blind in business, what are three pieces of advice that you would give to a fellow entrepreneur?
Okay, so number one would be to read The Lean Startup and read it twice, because most people that I know kind of read it and go like, oh, I got the idea, but they don't. And I say that with respect, like it's a really tough concept. And then, although he does a really good job of simplifying it. And then the second thing is to read my book, which is available on my website now. You know, it's not the best written thing in the world. Like I'm going to hire an editor here soon as I continue to polish it, but it's, you know, it's fully readable. I've written it for like 9 months and it's available. And my site is just my name, jaycrouch.com, J-A-Y. And the book's just right there. And that book will kind of take deeper the concepts that we talked about here and also give you some specific tips on, you know, like what kind of criteria and like years of experience that, for the advisors or advising CTO that you want. And there's also another section of the book that we didn't get a chance to talk about today, which is about how to structure your team how to structure a team based on your values and your budgets. You know, and this rolls everything from somebody who's just bootstrapping something in a garage to somebody who's, you know, got a really good solid team doing 20K a month or 50K a month. Who are the different players that are needed and how to structure all that, including outsourcing as well. So that's a later stage component of the book. So those would be, step one is read Eric's book. Second is read my book. And third is read a book by Olin Klauf. K-L-A-U-F. And that book is called Pitch Anything. And that book fundamentally changed the way that I looked at building businesses. It's the book's content is about pitching, as you'd guess from the title. But in there, he talks about how the human mind is built. It was built through evolution on layers. And so like at your core base of your brain, there's this reptilian brain that protects you from threats. And the important concept here is that too much information or overwhelming amount of information is a threat to the brain. And so if you cannot get your message across quickly enough to secure the person that you're speaking to, that you're not going to overwhelm them, that you're going to deliver the information quickly and simply and all that, that they're not going to listen to the message at all. And this has so many ramifications in terms of how you build products, to how you pitch your business, to how you raise money for your business. You know, it's like to how you speak to your staff. You know, once I saw this and I read it and I started realizing that most of the managers that were working for me were kind of like haphazardly going into conversations and just sort of talking and expecting the staff members that they were leading to just understand what they were saying, which they usually would get to at the end. I was like, wait a minute. Based on this, you need that 5 minutes of prep time to figure out what your point is, and moving that to the front of the conversation has an infinite amount of value. And then I'll just add a bonus. A fourth book is The Five Levels of Leadership by John C. Maxwell. And together, I would say those four would be the composite set. That book is about how to structure your organization in such a way that leadership is always giving back to the people that are powering them, and so in so doing, create an authentic relationship that helps the organization grow without a lot of the like broken promises which lead to politics and all of the rest. So, tremendous resources.
You just gave us a crap ton of homework, so I appreciate that because it's a lot. I mean, the information provided today has been so needed. And it was a great conversation, so I do appreciate your time. Jay, you successfully completed the podcast, so congratulations to you, sir. Where everything that you mentioned today, especially the books, are going to be linked, so people can go ahead and buy everything directly. Whether it's your book or whether it's all the other books mentioned. But if you could just take the next 30 seconds, go ahead and tell everyone how they can learn more about you, how they could be a part of your journey, or potentially become a customer. I know you mentioned your website, but if you want to just plug it again so everybody has it, go right ahead.
Yeah, so I'm accessible through my website. It's my name, jaycrouch.com, and that's jaycrouch. Like I said, the book is on there. You can reach me through the Connect form. You can also email me directly at connect at jaycrouch.com. And what was the other question there?
Maybe some social media. Maybe they could follow you on Snapchat, Tinder. Yeah, no,
not there. I'm building up like Facebook, but I'm just not there. Yeah, just email me. I'm really accessible. And becoming a client. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to help you build your business and build your dream, right? And that's everything I just talked about. I work in this capacity. I also work in a normal capacity. If you're a founder and you just want somebody to build your stuff, I will happily be your vendor. I'll happily be your consulting CTO as well. So there's lots of different ways that I work, but I would love to be the advising CTO. I'd love to just help you keep everyone else in check and connect you with resources that I have in my work. So,
very cool. Good stuff. Reach out. Well, thanks again for your time, and thank you guys that are still watching and listening for always liking, commenting, and subscribing. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube. You just hit the subscribe button right over there. And you can also head over to theblindentrepreneur.com for more interviews. Being blind in business is temporary, and I hope that after listening to the wisdom of Jay today, you are now able to see more clearly. Go out there and execute your vision, everyone. Have a good rest of your day. Thank you so much for watching this video. Don't forget to follow me on any and all social media platforms using the long last name above, followed by the letter J. If you want to get lost into the dark abyss of YouTube, click either left or right for another video. And finally, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. No, seriously, don't forget.